Before we embark on a brand new episode of Who's to Review, we'd just like to remind all our viewers that if you have any questions, opinions, theories, or anything that you would like to share, please email us at whostoreviewdoctorwho@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. A matter of fact, any email would be perfect, please, because we'll read them on the show and we'll have great fun. But without further ado, let's get to a trailer of this week's episode.
We're being dragged towards the planet.
I should be able to resist this sort of thing.
Sucked into the earth in front of my eyes.
The TARDIS has been destroyed.
Frontios buries its own dead.
Help me!
There's something going on here, isn't there?
I know what they are!
Tractatus!
We have been marooned on Frontios for 500 years.
They back an invention!
They are the appetite beneath the ground!
I think your colony of Earth people is in grave danger of extinction.
Tractatus need living flesh.
You will never leave Frontios now!
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Who's to Review. I'm your host Tom Denham and I'm joined by
Ben Holt. Hello as always.
And today we are reviewing a new classic Doctor Who episode. It's a brand new Doctor.
Another brand new Doctor.
We're having Doctors all over the place. You'd think we'd be sick.
we almost are.
Yeah. But today's episode we'll be reviewing Frontios, which is from season 21. It's the third story in the season. And Ben, going into this, what did you think?
Well, to be honest, this was my choice, this one.
Yeah.
We were having a bit of a look at your collection, as we always do. A bit of a crazy stare.
You get a bit lost when you're just looking up there.
I got very lost, especially today. But you did mention that this was one of your newest additions to the collection.
It was, yeah.
And what sold me is the fact that you hadn't seen it.
No.
You had never seen this.
Never seen Frontios.
I was blown away by that, and I figured, hang on, we haven't reviewed anything to do with Peter Davison yet, so it just seemed like an obvious choice.
It was.
Yeah. So going into this, I honestly didn't know what to expect. I was looking at the creature on the front thinking, probably not the most terrifying thing I've ever seen.
No.
Which obviously we'll get into a little bit more later on.
Mm.
But I think for the most part, I had high hopes. And
Did you? I did.
I was pretty excited to give this one a try, and unfortunately it didn't quite get there for me. But with that said, it wasn't a shocking story.
No.
So this episode is actually written by none other than Christopher H. Beardmead.
Yes. He's done quite a bit for Doctor Who in the past. He worked with Tom Baker on his last years of the show as he kind of wound up, and I believe he wrote Logopolis, and I believe he also wrote Peter Davison's first episode, Castrovalva, and he wrote this one too.
Yeah, but not a bad run.
I believe for some time he was also a script editor until Eric Saywood took over.
And Eric Saywood would also become a writer later on.
Yes.
Because he just wrote last week's episode that we reviewed, Revelation of the Daleks.
That's correct, Ben.
Isn't it crazy? It just goes in this spiral.
Everything ties together. We do a full circle.
It's just fantastic stuff. So here we are. Let's get into the plot for none other than Frontios. An irresistible force draws the TARDIS to the barren surface of Frontios, where in the far future, the last surviving humans cover amongst the ruins of their wrecked spacecraft. Under constant threat from lethal meteorite bombardments, few of the doomed colony members realise that the ground of Frontios itself opens up and devours the unwary. Not permitted to assist, the Doctor's attempt to leave is thwarted when the unimaginable occurs. The TARDIS is utterly destroyed. All the while, burrowing undetected below the planet's crust, sickening alien parasites prepare a gruesome and final fate for all humanity.
What a mouthful.
My goodness, I think that might be one of the biggest plots on the back of a Doctor Who DVD that I've read so far.
I think so. I think we have to give a chocolate to the next DVD that we read that has... I don't know why we give DVD chocolates.
Oh, but yeah. Obviously, like, we'll have to take our hat off or do something of some
extravagance. Something metaphorical, yeah.
Yeah, quite incredible, really. But it's odd because I'm reading that and I'm thinking it wasn't all that confusing of a plot when you were watching this. I mean, it was only four parts.
It was pretty straightforward.
It was. Mm. Now, immediately, I kind of like the fact that the TARDIS is destroyed. We get this false kind of realization that, hang on, he's not going to be able to rely on it throughout the episode.
Yeah.
Thought that was interesting, but most importantly, I love the fact that Frontios, being the planet, it was under attack.
Yeah.
The humans were running out of time. And initially, I always have a bit of a wild guess when I look at the episodes and the names. I just thought Frontios would have been the villain. It's either the villain or it's usually the planet.
Or a character in the story, yeah.
Or a character in a story. Mm. So, well, Tom, take us away. What did you like about this story to begin with?
Well, I kept on reiterating to you as we're watching this. I think predominantly in the first two parts of the story, for some reason, it felt like a New Who story. I don't know why. They kind of dropped off when we got to part three, part four. But for the first kind of half of the story, it felt like it was a story that was supposed to be for Matt Smith or David Tennant or even Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, it felt like there was a lot of character development in that opening two episodes. There was. Sure.
I think there's a couple of factors because of that. One is that Peter Davison's Doctor says it's a fixed point in time, we're not allowed to intervene with it. And that's something that the modern day era Doctors constantly say to their companions, yet they break those rules. And that's the same pattern here. So I could see writers like Stephen Moffat or Russell T Davies kind of going back to this story or to other stories like this, not really saying so, but you could see that's been implemented in the Doctor Who that we watch today.
Certainly trying to have a bit of a play with that kind of idea, for sure.
I think the other thing that was very consistent throughout the first two parts as well is that the music kept on going. Like,
yes, that was very, very interesting.
Paddy Kingsland's score, like, in a lot of classic Who stuff, especially in the studio sequences or sometimes the exterior sequences as well, there'd be lots of pauses without any music, and it was very much a transitional piece, or when a villain is doing something or when a character is going through some kind of trauma or something's happening, but the music is constantly there.
And one thing we even both pointed out, now that we've been watching quite a lot of classics in fast fashion, is each kind of episode always has its own kind of little theme in a sense, doesn't it?
It does.
In this episode, it was always dun-dun, dun-dun.
You got that music in there.
You did. Yeah. But as you said, it just kept on going and going and going, didn't it? It didn't really stop, and usually it'll pause just to get all the main dialogue out. But here, it was just continuous. It was quite interesting.
I'd be interested to go back to Kingsland's other stories that he's done. He's done Megalos, Full Circle, State of Decay, Legopolis, Castrovalva, The Visitation, Mordred Undead, and Frontios.
So it looks like that's quite a bit of Peter Davison.
A bit of Peter Davison and a bit of Tom Baker as well.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see if that's a bit of a contrast from those stories. I think I remember there was a similar kind of vibe in Mordred Undead. So it'll be good to kind of go back to those episodes and see like what Kingsland's score was like, if it had kind of evolved in between that quite a big or substantial gap in between Mordred Undead and Frontios, because we had probably a full season where he didn't do the music then. So it'll be interesting to see like what the contrasts are.
I really liked his music personally in this. I mean, what we've had, we've already reviewed stuff by Kef McCulloch and Dudley Simpson.
Yeah.
But this wasn't over the top. It seemed quite fitting.
Very subtle. Quite reminiscent of what Roger Lim does, like he did Revelation and he's done The Keep of Truck, and he's done quite a few stories of the 80s period and his music. Also Mark Ayres, they have a very subtle way of using music, I reckon.
Yeah.
And that's very, very good for classic Doctor Who.
I think subtle's better than two in your face.
I think that's, while I do enjoy Kev McCullough's score, That does tend to happen when Kevin McCulloch is the composer of a classic of his story.
Yeah, it starts to grate a bit. Get a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
Now, the main monsters in this...
The Tractators.
The Tractators did not work at all. I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I looked at them and I thought, okay, it's like an insect bug looking type creature. I thought, cool, there's potential. And then I saw how they were moving around in that costume.
Until they moved,
And they just looked ridiculous. So you couldn't save this villain for me at all.
I wasn't sold either.
No, it was a real shame too, because I kind of liked the build to it. And I'll tell you one thing I did like. I love the fact that they were kind of controlling humanity from underground.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. So you'd see different people who were actually getting kind of pulled under in this kind of static-like type.
Into the dirt.
It was fascinating. And it's just a real shame of what that actually turned into near the end.
It's funny that you mention that, because in the first two parts, the human colony are focusing on like what's above in the sky, because these meteorites...
Yeah, they're getting like pretty much bombed by these meteorites in a sense.
But it's the Tractators and Gravis that are pulling the meteorites to them.
That's right.
From underneath the surface.
Which is the big kind of the big twist midway through the story.
Yeah. And we're watching the documentary on this DVD, and Christopher H. Vidmead definitely played with those elements there, and he kind of had a bit of a chuckle about that.
He was pretty proud of this though, wasn't he? In some senses he really liked it, but he still says even to this day that the villain was pretty terrible. Or the enemies, which I agree. I was saying to you midway through, I was really disappointed with, you know, what it was.
I remember I was saying to you that this is a Doctor Who story which has an ambition and it wants to be something brilliant, but there's the constraint of the budget that the BBC gives.
The budget did kill it on this one, and you can kind of tell. With that said, I think the set design was actually quite fantastic.
I think so too.
I think, and I'm trying to think of the gentleman who put that together. His name was in the documentary.
Someone Buckingham.
Buckingham. He did an excellent job. There's actually some spectacular shots in this, which one of them I was just scratching my head trying to think how they even got it. Was when you'd see, the different people moving, and they were really tiny, and it was in like almost this set kind of made up look design, but then we realised that they kind of painted the frame and they'd stick the camera back really far to get that shot, but it was spectacular.
Yeah, what they did, they got like a glass screen or perspex screen, painted the rest of the architecture on there to match the set. And I think this was an element. I don't know if there's any other Doctor Who stories that have done this, but I remember seeing this when I was watching The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is made by a lot of other Doctor Who people. Like, I think the director on there has worked on Doctor Who, and I think the producer wasn't, but there's a lot of Doctor Who-related people who work on it, like Douglas Adams, for example. But, it was a really, really cool element that they played with, and I wish they explored this in further stories.
Because usually when you get the shots of the model sets and stuff...
They can look a bit tacky.
You kind of just have a bit of a harmless chuckle, a bit of a laugh. Yeah. But here, I was thinking, wow, that looks excellent. I love that.
Yeah, I really liked it too, and I wish that they played with that more, kind of more towards the end of Peter Davison's run and the beginning of Colin Baker's run.
Yeah, I think it was just a sense of creativity that, it just seemed like it was a bit of a flash in the pan. They kind of just tried to go for it. But in this case, I think it worked beautifully.
I think extending on the set design on this one of the things that really sold me on the detail in his story was the lighting.
The lighting was quite nice. It was subtle in some senses, but at the same time, it was quite beautiful. It got the job done.
There was that kind of nice orange look that they had on the exterior of the building.
That's right.
And as you went inside,
illuminated beautifully.
There was only the green kind of torches, and it had quite a luminous feel.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was very, very, very cool.
One of the other kind of factors that made me kind of keep focusing the story, not that the exterior filming turns me off, but to just have it all in one film quality was a lot less jarring for me.
Yes, you definitely know if it's shot in the studio or when you know it's outside. Yeah. That's absolutely a common theme throughout these classics.
Definitely.
Whereas here, didn't have that issue whatsoever, did we? It was all just crisp the whole time.
Because it was all in
studio. In the studio, that's right. Yeah. And again, that's going back to the budget constraints that they were facing at the time.
Definitely going on that, though, the sets that they had built were thoroughly extensive.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that's right. They were complex.
Mm.
So I think David Buckingham and his co, who built the whole set, I think with what they had, they did extremely well.
Yeah.
Personally. Now let's get to the cast. So we've got our main people at this point in time. So we have our Doctor, our fifth Doctor, who is Peter Davison. And I'm still a little bit new to Peter Davison.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I think he's good.
I think he's good too. And you can definitely see where like Doctors such as David Tennant get their influence from.
Mm.
I think I remember David Tennant saying that Peter Davison was his favourite Doctor. And yeah, that's definitely apparent throughout his run. Coming towards the end of Peter Davison's era, I remember hearing in an interview where he was talking to Patrick Troughton, and he was saying in this interview that Patrick Troughton told him, stay on for 3 years because that's the prime time to be Doctor Who.
Yeah, there you go.
And that kind of set the trend for a lot of Doctors to come.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really feel like kind of ending towards his run, Colin Baker's already been announced as the next Doctor.
I'm pretty certain it was only just a week prior to this story airing.
That's right, yeah.
So there was already excitement and anticipation in the air for the next one.
Yeah, there was a bit of foreshadowing on that, which is very easy to kind of let yourself down.
Yeah.
But I reckon Peter Davison just kind of grasped it as much as he could.
He just made the most of it.
Yeah, he just took it in his stride. And I really think of the Peter Davison stories I've seen, I've pretty much seen all of Peter Davison. I definitely think towards the end of his run, it gets a lot stronger now that he has lesser and lesser companions kind of wandering around as it's on the eve of Tegan's departure and it's on the eve of Turlough's departure. The chemistry between them has definitely built. And I reckon that's also really apparent in Mark Strickson's portrayal of Turlough.
Of Turlough.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the first time I've ever seen Turlough. I've seen Tegan before in Kinder.
Yeah.
But, this Turlough character was a head-scratcher, wasn't he?
He's a bit forgettable in The Five Doctors, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you are. I have seen him before then.
Yeah.
No, he's very forgettable in that. Whereas here, I think finally the writing kind of...
The problem
aided with his performance.
Yeah.
I think Mark Strickson's a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
I was really into his role here. But yeah, he's a bit of a tweener. You don't quite know if he's got good motivations or he's got bad motivations throughout this story. At least I think.
Yeah. And you kind of get a bit of an inkling of his backstory because at this point in time, we're not entirely sure where Turlough comes from. And you find out a little bit later on, which is really cool. I've already seen where he comes from, so I won't spoil it for you. But for those who do know where Turlough comes from and where he fits into the Doctor Who hierarchy, it's cool, kind of like, it's a bit of a precursor to kind of like what happens next.
No, you're absolutely right.
And that sequence where he's just in that kind of deranged shock, yes. I think whilst that what began to be very laughable, the more kind of static he got.
Had a level of intensity, though, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
And even all the foaming at the mouth. And
yeah.
It was excellent. I was loving that.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, Janet Fielding, an Australian companion,
yep,
plays Tegan.
Mm.
Gee, she really does sound Australian, doesn't she?
I mean,
we are Australian Doctor Who fans.
Mm.
So we're kind of celebrating at the fact that we have an Aussie as one of the lead companions. But
we come from the land of Tegan.
We do come from the land of Tegan, but the fact of the matter is sometimes she just... It just doesn't quite fit, in my opinion, just how she speaks. She's like,
Doctor,
you want to go back in the TARDIS? You know what I mean? Kind of yeah. A little bit ochreish, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say boganish, that's unfair.
No.
But very, very Australian in her delivery.
She's got a very bright personality, I reckon.
She does,
and that definitely stretches through the screen.
Mm.
And that's really nice to see with Peter Davison at this point in time, because she's been there since the end of Tom Baker's run, and she's kind of gone on to do, like, pretty much all of the Peter Davison run, bar two stories.
Really?
Yeah.
Goodness.
I think three stories. No, two.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Peter Davison did about 20.
Yeah. And
20 stories.
Dana was in almost all of them.
Gosh,
that's amazing. There's this lovely kind of... Yeah, there's this nice evolution between the two of them that is kind of overshadowed by Nyssa and... Nyssa and Adric for the first season, but then they begin to complement each other, then Adric pisses off, and then Turley comes along. So there's a lot of mixed matching in that period, but in between all of that, you get these nice little conversations between the two of them, and I guess that's really apparent in Frontios as well. There's a lot of teamwork between the two of them.
So I guess essentially what you're saying, if you don't like Tegan, you're not going to like Peter Davison's run.
I wouldn't say that.
No. But it definitely is a bit of a factor.
It is, definitely.
Yeah.
One of the great things about the Peter Davison run is that there's always more than one person to focus on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and Peter Davison's Doctor and William Hartnell's Doctor as well, they always had, like, more than one companion, which is really cool.
Yeah. It freshens it up a bit.
It does, yeah.
Whereas I guess in what we're finding in the new series at the moment...
That's and with Tom Baker airing, as well.
Yeah, like the new series, it's pretty much just the Doctor and Clara.
Or the Doctor and Amy, or the Doctor
What I mean? It's always usually just the one that's happening at the one time. But yeah, if you kind of add a few different ones, it keeps it fresh, I think.
Which in the same time is very risky as well. And I think that's what happened in Series 19, when they had the Doctor, Adric, Nyssa and Tegan all in the one space. You have to cater for all of these characters at the same time. So it seems very kind of unorthodox that they brought Turlough on after they got rid of Adric, because the main reason why they got rid of Adric is because there's too many characters. But it kind of seems logical that Turlough came in and then Nyssa left. So it was kind of like setting up for what was coming next.
Jeez. I'm kind of curious to actually check out that period where they've got three kind of companions happening at the one time.
It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
Once you watch the Key to Time series and then you get to the sequel of that kind of saga, which is the Black Guardian trilogy, it's quite interesting to sit back and enjoy.
Very good. And I must say, as always, we always like to do our pick, our favourite actor or actress for this episode of Frontios. Tom, who's it going to be for you? Who was your standout performance?
Oh, Ben, I adored William Lucas as Mr. Rain.
Oh, how great was Rain?
He was fantastic. Oh.
And we must say, William Lucas was not initially cast to play this character.
That's right. The original actor was unfortunately murdered leading up to... filming this story.
And it wasn't even a week prior. It was only a couple of days prior, wasn't it?
That's right. And then...
Very scary.
William Lucas to the rescue.
He did an excellent job.
And we didn't notice. We just thought he was in the role and he...
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. We just watched it and then we had a quick peek at the documentary after and we went, wow.
But he was very convincing as well.
He was. He was a fantastic replacement, but...
He had a really good gravitas, I think, with Peter Davison especially.
Yeah, there's a very, like, authoritative character. The whole time we're watching this, I was thinking, we're up to part two and he's still alive. We're up to part three. We're kind of
picking out who's going to die.
That's right, we were.
Yeah.
My personal favourite was none other than Peter Gilmore, who played Brazen.
Yeah.
Now, some people argue on his acting ability, whether he was wooden.
A bit bland.
Whether it was good. I think it was all in the vocal delivery because it was funny. Like, I found him really engaging when he was talking. But then if you were just to look at his face, he didn't really move his face all that much. There wasn't much happening facially. It wasn't all that engaging to actually
watch. It was kind of more in his stance.
That's right. It was in his stance and his delivery of the lines.
And his movement.
I thought he was a ripper in this.
Some actors are just better to be physical rather than facial.
That's right. You will always find these kind of general higher powered characters in classic Doctor Who that usually do just bark out lines.
And he has a great voice as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, that really helped.
Now, it's also worth noting the rest of the cast. Just as an honourable mention, this story had quite a few guest appearances, such as Leslie Dunlop, who's well known for her role in Emmerdale and Wear the Heart. I think that was the biggest one. And then they had Jeff Rawle, who was quite well known for his stage work as well. So all these people together, like every good classic Doctor Who story, and has a great ensemble.
And Jeff Rawle was actually a big part of this story.
He was.
Now, there's something that threw us. Now, with his character, his haircut at the start of the episode just somehow changes in between.
Yeah.
And that was never explained, was it?
No. Maybe he just went out, got a haircut and came back and they said, what are you? I got a haircut.
Yeah. I don't know. It threw me. It was like, was that part of the machine he was in at the end of the story?
Possibly.
Did it change his hair? We don't know. I don't know.
There's some fan fiction about it somewhere.
We'd have to ask David Buckingham maybe what was going on there, seeing as how he was running over the production design.
If you're listening, David Buckingham, you can email us at whostoreviewdoctor@gmail.com.
Oh, you're just shameless, Tom.
I know.
Just any time we can plug that, but seriously, we would love to hear from you in your emails. But back to this episode of Frontios. Tom, is there anything that you're burning to get off your chest about this story?
I like that I went in it with no expectations whatsoever.
And was that the right thing to do?
I think it's what I've been doing with Series 9 of Doctor Who, and Series 8 for that matter. If I go in with no expectations, I enjoy it better. And I think the Dractators didn't, while they were a bit jarring, it didn't put me off the story. And I think for that reason, it was really lifted by Bidmead's writing and by the presentation of the cast and how well they brought it all together. And it wasn't a story that was just bam, 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 intense all the time. It was kind of, it had its intervals where the characters got to communicate with one another. And it had its high peak moments as well, which I enjoyed.
It's interesting you say that, though, because I always feel that a classic story of Doctor Who is always weighted on how good that villain is. In my opinion, I think the villain really makes or breaks a story for me. So for this one, I was left pretty disappointed. And I love the build-up to this. That was
one of the great things about the story.
That's why I was so annoyed. It started off brilliant. They're like, oh, we've got no power. They're trying to take over the human race. Yeah. And then we see the monsters, and I got a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. I tried to kind of put that behind me.
Did you?
I couldn't
get past it.
Once you saw them move, it kind of left you a bit disgruntled.
Mm.
But when you got back to the story, that's what kept me waiting to find out what was going to happen at the end.
And we got to talk about the end quickly. I mean, geez, it just resolved itself too easily, didn't it?
I think so, yeah. It was just a bit of a push a button on the TARDIS.
Oh, come on, like really? Like, I was saying to you, well, looking at the time and I'm thinking, oh, there's only like 5-10 minutes before they wrap up this part 4.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be something ridiculous, something simple.
We were discussing it kind of as it was leading up, and then it happened.
It's as if it was an afterthought how to end this story.
Yeah.
That really annoyed me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It just might
frustrated.
Be, Christopher H.B. Meade just might have been having a rushed day at work. He had to finish it in 5 minutes. Who knows?
Yeah, and he just penned that together at the end. But I mean, come on. Can you give me something a bit more exciting to end this story on? It just, I don't know.
I think you'd be disappointed.
Overall, I was a bit disappointed with the story. Well, it wasn't atrocious by any means.
No, it was definitely lifted up by the cast.
With that said,
at the end of the day,
yeah. Again, as always, I was entertained throughout the whole thing.
Mm.
I wasn't bored to death. It wasn't Time in the Rani. I was able to get through it okay.
All in all, it wasn't any TV movie either.
No, that's right. So, essentially, again, it's another one produced by John Nathan Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Jones did the direction for it, even though some people thought he wasn't quite fit for the role.
No.
He was a bit more of an easygoing director. He wasn't as helpful in a sense. He didn't shape people's performances as much as they would have liked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was something interesting I found.
Definitely.
But I think for the most part, This episode didn't quite get it done for me, and I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10?
For Frontios.
I reckon that's fair. I'm going to give it a 7, I think.
Giving it a 7?
7. I think I was well entertained.
So, I think the question begs, well, there's two things, actually. Firstly, this DVD is very, very tricky to find at retailers.
It depends where you're looking. Like, for where we are, I've been able to find any shops, so I luckily got it off a friend who was very kind. But it was out for a while, then it kind of just disappeared, as some DVDs do. But
I couldn't imagine this one selling a great amount, personally.
I think that might be one of the reasons why.
I'm not sure. I don't, even looking at the front cover of this one, you know, they've got the monster on the front and
the Tractators.
Tractators, and it just looks it just looks a little bit silly in a sense.
Yeah. I don't mind the cover design. I definitely think what we said in the Talents of Wang Chiang review, each cover is kind of a nice reminder of what happens in the story. You've got the Doctor in the middle with his spectacles.
Got Turlough.
And you've got Turlough because it's a very Turlough-centric story. And then you've got the Gravis and the bits of the TARDIS kind of floating around. It's a nice reminder when you go back and you peruse through the DVD collection of kind of what happened in that story. And it's a kind of a bit of a full circle.
Yeah, that's right. No, I do agree, because even some that I've just watched a long, long time ago, you can pull out the DVD cover in your collection. I'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that.
And it has those pictures on the back as well.
And those helpful pictures at the back. Yeah, that's right. So I guess all in all, is this essential viewing?
I would recommend it.
You'd recommend it?
I wouldn't recommend it as first time viewing for classic Doctor Who or Peter Davison, but I definitely recommend it once you've watched about maybe 4 or 5 Peter Davison episodes.
Might be worth having another look at.
Totally.
But I think as far as for the small amount of Peter Davison I've seen, I'm just hoping, and I think there's much greater to come from him.
Oh, flipping heck there is.
Oh, yeah?
Wait till you get to Resurrection of the Daleks, Planet of Fire, and Caves of Androzani. All of the following stories are 10 out of 10.
Just top-notch stuff, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Just fantastic.
Mm.
That's excellent. So, as always, ladies and gentlemen, that was our review of Frontios. Mm. And you can find us at many different areas. And, Tom, where can our audience find us?
First of all, you can find us at whoistreview.blogspot.com.au. You can also subscribe to us via there from iTunes. And you can also listen to us on SoundCloud. And you can contact us at whoistoreviewdoctorwho@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Facebook at whoistoreview classic Doctor Who.
And going back to the Gmail, we want to hear from you, so please send in any questions you can. Let us know if we got something wrong. Let us know if you completely disagree with your opinion.
Let us know if there's an episode that you want us to review.
If there's an episode you want to review, perhaps you want to join us on one of the shows one week. Let us know that too. Or simply let us know why you thought Frontios was awesome.
Or bad.
Yeah, or bad, absolutely. Yeah. All we're saying is we'd be delighted to hear from you. And if you send in any questions, and also audio questions are more than welcome as well. Yeah. And then we can throw them on the show. You can get your voice heard on the show.
Yeah. And all of these will be read out in the following episode.
That's right. And we are more than happy to dedicate a part of the show for that, because I think it's good fun.
Absolutely.
Any Doctor Who chat's good chat, in my opinion.
It is indeed.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you have a fantastic evening. As always, we try to drop this every week on Monday. It doesn't always happen like that.
It's a bit hit and miss.
Yeah. So sometimes things get a little bit busy and it doesn't get uploaded as quick as we'd like, but it will come out each week.
Yeah.
And it has been. Check out last week's episode, Revelation of the Daleks, to hear
Claws of the Axos. Claws of Axos. Yes. I do apologise.
My goodness. Yes. Oh, gosh, time flies.
It does.
Yeah.
Just a bit like time flies.
Yeah, that's right. A bit like time flies. Yeah, that's right. Last week's episode was the Claws of Axos. Certainly check that one out if you haven't, because it was certainly a John Pertwee adventure.
And also check out Revelation of the Daleks, because that's quite a good Todd Knotts Colin Baker story too.
And not to mention Tom's Dalek and Davros impression is worth having a look just on its own. And best of all, it's simply free.
Does it
get any better than that?
It doesn't, I don't think.
No, it doesn't get any better than that. Yeah. So with that, we'll say enjoy the brand new episode of Doctor Who this Sunday. And what's that episode called? It's part two.
It'll probably be aired by the time this comes out. The episode that we're waiting for is Before the Flood.
Ah, Before the Flood. Mm. Yes, yes.
By the time this goes out, we'll probably be up to The Girl Who Lived, or The Woman Who Lived.
Or The Woman Who Lived, another two-parter. Yeah. And lastly, just a quick bit of discussion. Is this brand new series working for you at all, or...?
I think it is. I think they've taken a step in the right direction and they're letting the stories breathe a bit more.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, and Capaldi's certainly comfortable in his role by now. He's doing quite well, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, that's great. Well, there we are. My goodness, I'm not going to say we're out of time because we could record for 3 hours, but we're not going to record for 3 hours until we get to Doctor Who the movie.
Indeed.
Which we will reveal when we'll do that, but not just yet.
Mm.
So, a fantastic night, evening, morning, wherever you are in the world. We thank you for listening very much to Who's to Review. It was episode 7. It was Frontios. And have a fantastic time. Take care. Thank you.
Goodbye.